the latest news and advice from the world of tech. It's crunch time, but how do you know whether to invest in the Amazon Echo or the Google Home, the iPhone X or the Galaxy Note 8, PlayStation or Xbox? It's all too much. Have no fear. Our tech team is here. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll compare notes on the latest devices and what they have to offer. We'll also check in on the latest tech news, including the FCC's move to undo net neutrality and what that could mean for the internet as we know it. And as always, we want to hear from you. Share your questions by emailing talk@mainpublic.org, post to our Facebook page, or pick up your device and give us a call. The tech team is here for you. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Call. Maybe you've made up your mind about what technology, if any, you'll give as gifts this holiday season. Or maybe you're feeling some anxiety about trying to figure out which device to buy. Take a deep breath. Our tech team is here with us today, and they're willing to compare notes on phones, tablets, gaming systems, smart speakers, you name it, they will answer your questions. Joining me in the studio, Janet McKinney is Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein is owner of Techport. And as always, we want to hear from you. How much do you know about the tech world and some of these devices we'll be talking about? Maybe you can share your opinions as well. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll go to calls early today to get as many in as we can in the hour. First, though, some developing news in the world of technology. The FCC appears poised here along partisan lines to undo net neutrality rules, which have mandated that internet service providers treat all internet content equally. Let's just get an opinion of the panel here and some a sense of what it might mean for consumers. Jared, we'll start with you.
I'm not a fan. I think it's bad for consumers. I think we're all getting screwed. I can't be any more plain about it. I've always viewed the internet like a utility, like electricity. You know,
it's a necessity.
Yes, it's a necessity these days, and it's you know, it's the backbone of communication and education. And we talk about here a million times, especially in a state like Maine with such limited rural internet access. It limits progress and it limits opportunity for people. And if now all of a sudden, in order to get content through the internet, you need to, or somebody will need to pay more, or essentially somebody who delivers that information to you now has a say based on what you're paying. You know, if Janet and Andrew and I all live next door to each other, and well, we all get electricity at the same rate, and it all comes to us when you flick on the light bulb. If all of a sudden Janet makes a deal and says, well, you know what, I'll pay a little bit more than the other two guys, well, when we flick on the light switch, it doesn't turn on instantly. And that's essentially where we're going. We're going to a pay for play on the internet. And in my opinion, I just think it's on many levels, a bad idea. But the very foundation it builds, honestly, it kind of scares me for the future, because I'll be an old man someday saying, I remember when the internet was free. And I think that should be something that we all have forever.
Janet McKinney, advocates for this, including the Republican members of the FCC, which hold a majority on the panel, say, yeah, look, this will allow, the government shouldn't have its hands in running the internet. And B, this would allow those big providers to invest in their networks and maybe provide more access. At least that's their argument. Well, how do you see it?
I probably agree with Jared more. I don't see that particular view, although, you know, I'm not Time Warner Cable or Spectrum or anybody like that. You know, I think the, you know, the real advantage, I mean, Chairman Pai had this in his idea before he became chairman, and, you know, he's making that happen. I think really the only thing that people can do is to read as much as they can about it so they're educated, and to contact their legislator, because I think the FCC will go ahead with it, and then the only thing would be is if Congress did something about it to change it.
Andrew, I'm going to guess that you're also opposed.
I am opposed because it just means higher prices. It means that we have to pay more for sometimes less. I think that one thing that we have to remember is that the FCC is framing this as a way to be more hands-off. But actually, the government is really there, in my opinion, to provide, to make sure that we all have equal access and that we there's no one else looking out for the average American except the FCC in this case. And when they say that, well, you're going to have to pay more for this or that, depending on the commercial vagaries of different utility, you know, of different ISPs, it's a problem.
So as listeners can probably tell, we have not assembled a panel here to debate the net neutrality issue, but I did want to run it by you. So we're not really taking calls on that today. But I also want to run by you another item in the news today, which is that, let's see, I don't have my glasses on. I've taken them off. There's a story about how location data is being tracked, Jared, even when we're turning off our location data on our cell phones.
Oops. Google came out. There was an article yesterday and many articles about how they basically admitted on some Android phones, even when you turned off location services, saying essentially, do not track me. I do not want to share my location information. Oh, oops. They're still doing it.
And they're triangulating cell towers.
Yeah, off the cell phone towers and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm a big believer in we should all be given an opportunity to hopefully opt out of tracking and things like that. We are tracked. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, from the time you get up in the house with your Easy Pass, how many cameras you go through every day, your internet traffic. I mean, we are living in Big Brother times, except it's not necessarily being spied on. We're volunteering a lot of this information. But even when given the opportunity to opt out of that, you know, lo and behold, we're finding out that you're not necessarily opted out. That information's still being collected. And that goes back to something I tell my customers routinely. People ask about security and how do I stay safe. And I literally live by the philosophy, if you put it on a device or carry a device, just assume that information is out there. We live in the world. If you've got something on your computer, it's a sad thing to say, but assume it's out there. Careful what you share and which, but just assume the worst and hope for the best. But
yeah, this goes back also to the net neutrality thing. Mm-hmm. Some people have made the case saying, look, before you get all worked up about this net neutrality thing, the internet is already controlled by large corporations named Google and Facebook. It's not the same kind of control, but there is great power in these companies, not only about data, but what is censored in some ways.
There's been a bit of a legislative vacuum, in a sense. It's taken time to understand these technologies, and in that time, they've created remarkable things. But we have to understand that corporate goals are not the same as the average American's goals. We want services, but corporations need income to provide them. So there has to be a balance between what's fair and what's not fair. It's not fair that you can take a ride in Uber and you get out and they're still tracking you. You know, there needs to be a catch up with some basic understanding of that location services means I don't want to be tracked.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to some devices that what we're talking about today. Fun stuff.
Presents.
selfishly, I'm going to ask first about smart speakers or virtual assistants, as they're called. These are the devices that that respond to your voice commands and can do anything from, you know, answer basic questions to help you with cooking or timing or turn on lights and play music. Jared, again, we'll start with you. What are sort of the big players in this realm at this point?
Your biggest player has been for the last couple of years, and people that listen regularly have heard me talk about it for a while, but Amazon makes the Echo, send the Alexa, you know, the essentially Alexa. The name of the product is Echo and the show, and they have different ones. But the idea being it's a speaker, a cylinder you can put on your counter, connect it to the Wi-Fi, and you can play music, ask the weather, get facts, play games. We love to play Jeopardy on ours. You can play Jeopardy every day and get different questions. But now it's also become a hub to control as people start adding smart devices into their homes, control your lights, control your locks, ask, you know, there's TVs out there you can control. I mean, we're literally moving into the Star Trek realm where you just open your mouth and you can lay on the couch and say, Alexa, turn off the living room lights, and boom, you're in the dark. So
Google is the other player.
Google Home. Yeah, the Google has one. And then there's also third-party speakers that are coming out now. I noted one that I read about. I don't have, but it looked pretty cool, called the Boom from Ultimate Ears. And it's a high-quality, just regular Bluetooth speaker like we've already had. Mm-hmm. But now they're actually just building Alexa and Amazon capabilities into third-party speakers. So you can buy a speaker as you normally would. But now you also have some of those added capabilities like playing Amazon music or controlling your home things. But, for people that do it, they love it. For people that don't do it, go, that's crazy.
But is it one of those things, though, that maybe this year is a tipping point? As more of these devices get into homes and word of mouth travels, these devices will become much more common in our households?
Right. Like Apple announced last spring that they were bringing something called HomePod to the market, which is a small speaker that has fantastic sound, apparently, whereas some of the other speakers on the market are just mainly, you know, don't have the great sound. But with HomePod, that was a big on a lot of people's Christmas lists, but it's been delayed as Apple fine-tuned everything. Apparently, it's going to use Siri, and it requires a little bit of tuning for that. So that's something that's going to be early 2018. But that I was excited about. But I think that we're getting the second generation of these products. Both Google and Amazon have products out there that are really going to fill the need for a home stereo system. It's going to be great sound, and right now it's just sort of like it's a speaker, but you know,
right.
You want a stereo. So things are really advancing with that.
So Amazon has had the benefit of a few years head start, yep. And so does theirs offer, I guess, a slight edge in terms of capability?
I have the Echo Dot, and I think the funniest thing is...
That's the less expensive
version. Yeah, yeah, it's just a tiny little thing, and, you know, Alexa talks to me more than I talk to her, all of a sudden, out of nowhere. So I think, actually, as far as Christmas gifts, you know, these are something that somebody like your son and daughter is going to give you, and then that person's going to have to figure out what they do with it, and then how do they integrate it into their life. And, you know, first it could be, you know, play some music or play some music from my list, and then you get into making lists, and then you get into the further controls. So, you know, I see as people get more educated about how this technology actually fits into their lives, you know, you're going to see more adoption. But I think people will buy them and have them before they fully utilize them.
It's like a lot of technology, and I fall deep into this category, probably only use 5% of what something offers you. And the Alexa products and the Google products and Apple, they're going to add more and more capabilities to do that. You mentioned, I've really worked hard on this in years past to go, okay, don't buy my mom the technology I want. She doesn't want that. And it's just going to end up in a box somewhere. But these devices are relatively easy to set up and use. And like Janet said, you know, start small, baby steps. If you do get one for a family member, one that I think is cool, Amazon Echo Show, which actually has an LCD screen on it, and you can even do essentially video conferencing. So if you've got family members, you know, grandma's down in Florida and the family's up in Maine, or vice versa, that's a great opportunity to have that same features, but also mix in, you know, instead of grabbing your phone for FaceTime, you've got a device right there. So
what's the cost range on these?
I think those are like $229, somewhere in there. Yeah. And I'm not going to hype big on Black Friday, but, you know, try and stay home. But if you do go online a little bit, there will be some pretty deep discounts on Amazon for some of those products.
We'll go to the phones with a question about actually speakers, if you have any hi-fi, as we used to say, in a moment. But speaking of gifts that mother might not want that you might want, virtual reality, VR, this could also be a big gift this year. Any particular, mm-hmm. are any of you guys users or...
Well, you got to put up with a little motion sickness these days with that. VR isn't quite where I don't think it's parent or grandparent ready quite yet, because it is very disorienting for some people, and you know it is kind of it's gimmicky at this point, and it's going to get better. Apple is putting a lot of resources into it as well. So it's just going to get better with that competition.
Google Daydream and Gear VR are two
Oculus
that
and
come up. Yeah.
And if you don't like the teacups, you're not going to like, like VR, but, I think as that develops a little bit, I mean, I think 5-10 years in the future, if even, I mean, there will be a turning point where it becomes, you know, if you're a video gamer, you're not going to be on a flat screen. You know, if, Google had the kind of almost the cardboard VR one. But even if you think about the news, someone could be in an area and literally just take a 360 degree view of a scene, and you could actually essentially be there. So it's not just going to be gaming and things like that. There will be ways, you know, deeper ways, education and things like that, to immerse yourself in places that you literally could not maybe even get to. So it's an opportunity.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, we're at the State Library. We're really looking into VR and looking for grants to see what the possibilities are. The Rockport Public Library actually got a grant. They have a HTC Vive and a VR setup. They did a great demonstration at the Maine Library Association, and all of us got to put them on and walk a plank, or, you know, like be in Africa or be underwater. And it's really amazing. And so, you know, one of the things that I've seen with the HTC Vive is you have more of an area to move around in. PlayStation's doing a VR game, and that may be on my Christmas list. I don't know if I have the stomach for it. We'll see. But I'm really interested in the technology and actually, you know, where it's going as far as like student and learning experience, and especially in rural Maine where kids can't travel as much and they don't get as much exposure to what's all around the state in elementary school and high school. So that's kind of the way we're going.
I'm still impressed by the GAF ViewMaster. Still don't understand how that works, but it takes me to whole new worlds.
3D, how do they do that?
Including Jellystone Park.
Yeah.
So let's talk about gaming then. Anything new on the horizon? Are we still talking about PlayStation versus Xbox? Yeah. And
The Nintendo Switch is one that's really... pulling.
Well, and it looks Janet's like excited.
Janet's excited for that.
I'm addicted
She's
to my Switch.
She's a bigger gamer. She's a big gamer.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the Switch, Jen.
Well, it's portable, so it hooks up to your TV. It fits into a slot, but then you can also remove it and becomes a handheld. And it's what amazes me is it's seamless. So I can be, you know, using my Switch, you know, controller, and on the television. And then decide I'm just going to put that down and pull it out of its little thing. And now I've got a handheld and I can go into the other room and, you know, continue my game and vice versa. So it's seamless. It's like two buttons and all of a sudden everything's working again. But
So your 11-year-old could go and do a chore without being torn away from their game.
Exactly.
Hmm. Well, and you can also bring, a lot of parents are a little bit nervous about kids being isolated with a game, but this gives an opportunity for it to become a family game. You can reintegrate, you know, a solo player back into a family game. And it's...
Yeah, and, you know, I think, too, you know, the graphics so far that I've seen, you know, on Zelda have been really, you know, beautiful. And I've been playing. I got it for Mother's Day last year, and I'm probably another month away from beating the game. Now, I work, you know, I'm older, you know, I'm not, like, addicted to it. But, you know, I just think the Switch represents like a whole, you know, next step as far as the integration of the portable handheld gaming device with, you know, the PlayStation attached to your television.
And cost?
I think around $300, $299. It was a gift from my kids, so I can't remember.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco.
Thanksgiving and football are a holiday tradition, but after another volatile season, fans are once again taking a tough look at the future of the sport they love.
If they don't find a way to make it safe, as great as it is, as much fun as it is, the game's not going to be around.
I'm Ari Shapiro, assessing America's favorite spectator sport this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 on Maine Public Radio. And if you tune in to All Things Considered on your way home or while preparing food for the evening, we'd like to suggest another program for you to view a little later on Maine Public Television, the PBS NewsHour. The program airs at 7 every evening on Maine Public Television and at 10 o'clock on the Maine Public World Television channel. PBS NewsHour is known for its toughness, fairness, and impartiality. As you expect from public media, it's a commercial-free news source that you can trust. You can join the growing audience every evening for the PBS NewsHour, tonight at 7 on Maine Public Television and again at 10 on the World channel.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, answers to your tech questions. Joining me in the studio, Andrew Rosenstein is owner of Techport. Janet McKinney is director of library development for the Maine State Library. And Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology. We invite you to join the conversation. The number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Let's go to the phones to Jenny in Winthrop. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have the ability to listen to all kinds of music through the radio that I can get in my on my laptop. I can use wireless speakers. I'm kind of an old fart, but I still want to use my vinyl. And my vinyl is my turntable is connected to an amplifier that's not new. It's a few years old. It doesn't have HD capability. It doesn't have direct Bluetooth capability, anything like that built into it. What I'm looking for is a unit that I can attach to my amplifier that will broadcast via Bluetooth to a wireless speaker so I can listen to my vinyl while I'm anywhere I want to be in my house. And so I've done some looking around, and I haven't really found yet what I'm looking for. I don't want it to be battery operated. I'd like it to be able to be, you know, electronic rather than, you know, plugged into the wall. I hate replacing batteries all the time or recharging batteries all the time. So is there a system that you're aware of, or just a little unit that I could, a pair of speakers I could plug into, or a speaker I could attach Bluetooth-wise to my amplifier?
Okay. I'll open it up to the group.
We're all looking. I mean, in general, I don't have an example of an exact one, but...
is there something I could be looking for? Is there a word or a term you could...
Yeah. I was just looking, you know, basically you're looking for an amp or a Bluetooth adapter. Typically, you'll find a Bluetooth adapter that will plug into one of your auxiliary out ports. So you need to know, a lot of times newer devices have much smaller ports. If it's an older one, it might, I don't know, I can't remember the exact millimeters, but it might be the larger port. So you need to know which auxiliary port out you have, just like you are plugging it into a pair of speakers, except instead of going to the speakers, it's going to go to a Bluetooth adapter, which will then broadcast that. So you essentially, they typically make, you know, essentially a universal Bluetooth adapter. What you would need to know is just exactly which auxiliary port out you have, what size, so you get the right one. But just
I have to have an adapter for the adapter too, huh? Can they help the?
Yeah, actually, that's I don't know. Yeah, right. It might affect your quality a little bit, but technically, mm-hmm. sometimes there would be an adapter to bring the larger size down to the smaller, and then plug a USB or a Bluetooth adapter into that, and then that would then broadcast to whatever Bluetooth speakers you happen to have. So it's a little bit of a daisy chain, but I think if you go down that path, you should be able to find what you're looking for.
Okay. Jenny, best of luck. From Colleen, my daughter is studying away in Costa Rica next summer, and they're recommending that she bring a Windows laptop. They are Apple people, but she needs to run Microsoft Office for some online research. And so they're looking for a cheap laptop running Windows 10 that will be fine for her 3-month program. Any specifics?
I would go with something on the tougher end of things. Lenovo makes a really solid laptop that can withstand a few bumps here and there. I would steer clear of the thinner Lenovos like the Yoga and things that are. But certainly you can also get a subscription to Microsoft Office 365, and you can share documents easily between a PC and a Mac that way as well. So
I agree with that. Lenovo and Asus, A-S-U-S, are the two brands that we typically recommend. If you do want to keep costs down, you're probably not going to end up with that thinner, sleeker model anyway, which is fine. I would definitely avoid, especially if you're traveling a lot, a touchscreen.
Can it be done for under 200?
Under 200?
No.
It's going to be tough.
You might be able to find something used.
Yeah.
Newegg.com
is a good place to look for. They do quality refurbished units that will come with a, you know, you buy a refurbished thing is a little trade-off. It's obviously refurbished and used. You also usually get a shorter warranty. But if you are looking, I would say, I mean, we typically tell people for $400 these days, you can get a really nice brand new Windows machine that will be very capable, especially over the next 4 weeks with the holiday onslaught and prices coming. This would be the time to look. But those are good brands. And, yeah, I think you know it might be closer to $300 for something of quality, but you don't have to break the bank and definitely get something that, unfortunately, if something does happen, you're not going to lose your shirt.
All right, we're going to go. We're going to go to Floyd now, who has a suggestion for Jenny, who was looking for these speakers earlier. Hi, Floyd. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks. So I just heard Jenny. I guess her name is. And honestly, the easiest thing for her to do is not that technical. All she needs to do is buy a set of headphones from Sennheiser. They're about $100, and it really is just an RF wireless headset. And there's two kinds. There's one kind that you don't need a battery for. There's one kind that you do. And they're just, little, whatever they are, small batteries that go in. And she can wear it anywhere she wants up to, I think the range is like 300 feet. And Bluetooth has nowhere near that range, by the way.
Okay. Floyd, thank you very much. Appreciate the advice. Let's go to Peter in Surrey. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much, and you guys have a fantastic show, and it's my first time caller. But anyway, so my question is this, it's kind of like low-tech maybe for right now, is that laptops, now when you're using your laptop and it goes down in battery life, is it 10%, 5%, or should you let it die before charging it? And then, therefore, also when you do come up to full charge, should it be immediately unplugged at 100%, or it's good to leave it on for a little while, but if you keep it plugged in for a long term, you can't? Like, what are your – I figure I could leverage the group knowledge here, and I'd love to hear the center.
All right. Well, yes, this is the battery training team.
Right. Well, batteries recharge best – before they've completely given out. So my general rule, and I think everybody has their own little playbook for this, but I feel like, you know, just start recharging about between 10% and 5%. And if you charge up to 100%, you can disconnect. When it reaches 100, every once in a while, you can let it charge a little bit over 100%. And sometimes people just plug their computers, their laptops in, and just leave them plugged in. And that is battery death. You have a battery couch potato. Your battery needs exercise and needs to get out. And every couple of days, you need to use your machine on battery power.
Yeah. Agreed? Everybody agree?
100%.
Yep.
That's the under 5, 10%. In an ideal world, you would pretty much run your battery to 100%, unplug it, run it down under 10%, charge it. It's not realistic for people to always do that, but the whole plug in at 67, run down to 32, back up to 80, you know, random numbers is not going to hurt it necessarily, but you're not going to extend the battery the way you should. And Andrew's analogy was perfect. It's what I always say. It's like a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. And when people tend to figure that out is people that leave their laptop in a desktop environment, it's plugged in 24/7. They're going to go on a trip or go somewhere. Then they unplug it and they go, my battery doesn't work. This is garbage.
Well, that was my wife's experience, and that's part of why I'm calling.
Well, you're a good husband. Congratulations.
And also say as well, though, the Switch is fantastic, and my son. You know, the dual part to that though is that we just got it, and he's really getting into Zelda. And he's like, wait a second, though, you don't want to also do this. So like he's you know, it's a great community thing. At the same time, it's very immersive. I can see that quality to it. So, you know, it's definitely a put together good machine. So anyways, well, thanks so much for your show, and I'll look forward to more of your program.
Thank you. All right, Peter, thank you very much. Again, 1-800-399-3566 to John in Freeport. Hi, John.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question about email. I have my email through a major company, and it recently got hacked, and a fictitious document or something was sent out to about everyone, I think, that was in my address book. Plus, my address book was taken somewhere, and it now is empty. Since then, I went in, I changed the password on that particular account, and I called the major company, and they said there was nothing they could do to help me retrieve the address book. I would have thought it would have been stored on their site where I had to go to their site to do my email. I guess I should have had it backed up on my computer or the iPad or something. Now, since then, I have created a new email account through a different source, and that takes the addresses from like my iPad or my iPhone. So is there anything else that I should do, or do you have any suggestions how I've notified folks of the, you know, the issue? I don't know if anyone went anywhere else or not. Mm-hmm. Any ideas?
It's a common problem. One thing I'd like to – it's important is, you know, a lot of times your account was hacked. It's not – guys in the movie cracking code and hacking in. They're not
Russians.
They're not. Yeah, they're well.
Maybe. Yeah,
not for this guy. Although, I mean, there have been, they say, you know, they track things back and, you know, say it's Russians or Koreans, and they say it's, but who knows who it is. But somebody, it's not often, they're not directly targeting Keith and Jared and Janet and Andrew. Your information is crack somewhere in a massive data breach. I mean, how many times have we heard in the last year about a massive data breach? So what they will do is once they get that information, they can then get into your account, essentially send emails from your account, take your contact list so that then they can then propagate their scam. So if you guys are in my address book, well, you get an email from me, you're more likely to click on it and open it or see what the attachment is, and boom, you're now infected and so forth and so on. So there's not much you can do to protect yourself against that. You've already done the smart things. The first thing you should do is always change your password. If you think your computer might have been compromised, change it from a clean machine. If you have an iOS device like an iPhone, that's a great thing to do it from, because those are you're not worried about that type of malicious software. A lot of emails, accounts as well, Your contacts, you can export maybe into an Excel file or a CSV, so you actually have a hard copy that's outside of that realm. So if something does happen, you don't lose it. People lose a lot of things, and I just tend to find that once they figure out they've lost their contacts, because it's like our cell phones and our emails, I don't know anyone's phone number. You just tell Siri to call.
The name, you know,
yeah, or you start typing the name. So, yeah, it's but if you can export a local copy, that's a good way to keep yourself backed up. But you took all the right steps, and I wouldn't tell you not to go and tell people or anything, but honestly, sometimes you're banging your head against a concrete wall when you're trying to essentially track people down or get a company to do it. It's just part of doing business these days.
The other thing, if I could add, Jared, that you know the call may be coming from inside the house. So essentially, you may have malware or a virus that or you may have received malware or virus through email, just was sent to 50 million random people. So it's pretty important to have software like Malwarebytes or Avast, something that scans as incoming and outgoing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's all precautions. I mean, there's no brick wall against this stuff. No one's come up with that. And if anyone can figure it out, you will retire early.
All right. John, best of luck. All right. We're going to take another quick break. Again, the number to join the conversation here, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to break, I'd like to take a moment, though, to thank the Maine Calling listeners for all of your participation and feedback this year. We value you as listeners, and all of us here at Maine Calling would like to wish you and your family safe travels and a happy Thanksgiving. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Support for Maine Calling comes from listeners like you. Thank you. On the next Speaking in Maine, the Maine Women's Summit on Economic Security.
What's happening to Black women, what's been happening to Black women, is a signal about what's in store for everybody.
Alicia Garza is a co-creator of the Black Lives Matter movement. She explains its role in the 21st century and explores ways to confront prejudice in the United States. You can hear the discussion on Speaking in Maine, Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio. For a complete schedule of our 2 p.m. public affairs programming, including Speaking in Maine, visit mainepublic.org. There you'll find detailed descriptions of the speakers as well as links to audio, so you can listen again at any time. In the weather right now, it's still cloudy statewide, with temperatures in the upper 30s to low 50s.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, our tech team answers your Apple, Amazon, and other tech questions. In the studio with me, Jared Maxfield. He's owner of Necessary Technology. Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort, and Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library. The number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Via email, Gail asks, what's the safest, most dependable way to store digital photographs?
In multiple places.
Yes. Some of the, I usually say a couple of things. Store them on a hard drive that you can hold in your hand, store them in cloud storage, Google Pictures, or one of the Google systems, and also, why not just load them up to a service like Shutterfly, where you do have to print them. It's kind of a one-way street. They don't quite always tell you that, but they're available. They're somewhere. They're available for printing.
Not on a thumb drive in your sock drawer?
No.
No.
No, people also need to remember, too, that USB thumb drives have a very unstable storage, and you put something on those drives, like photographs, come back a year later, and they might not be there.
Okay. Well, I guess
Rule of thumb, anything important, pictures, anything, my rule of thumb, keep it in two places. Two hard drives, two computers, a hard drive, and a cloud account. Doesn't matter how you hodgepodge it. Anything should be in two different places. Assume if it's in one place, you're going to wake up tomorrow and it's gone. If that's a bad day, week, or year for you, back it up in two places. And
I save mine on the old phones that I took them with.
How do you put a Polaroid on
history,
that?
History, right.
No. All right, let's see. Let's go to Paul in Pittsfield. Hi, Paul.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Good, thanks.
This is really a top priority question. I'm sure Apple's not listening, but I'm going to ask anyway. And back in the early days of the iPhone and iPhone 6, Siri's voice had a fairly friendly, human, feminine quality. It was the voice of Susan Bennett, the original Siri voice. And after upgrading to 11.0.1 and beyond, it's no longer her. It's now a more mechanized, robotic, icy, sort of unfeeling voice. What happened, and how can we revive the old Susan Bennett Siri voice?
Well, we have to say, too, that today is Scarlett Johansson's birthday. She's 33, I've heard. But she was the voice in the movie Her that featured kind of an all-purpose, very, very human assistant. The voice has changed, yes. I don't know why.
I don't know about going back, but good catch. Good catch.
Right. Paul,
I shall endure. Nevertheless. Right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Paul.
Let Apple know and tell them you want a more human Siri.
Yeah. Right.
Why don't you apply for it? Could I just record your voice?
Mine? Oh, my God, no.
Don't be afraid to embrace your corporate robot overlords. Say thank you for the phone.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Freeport and Gimbala. Hi, Gimbala. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Hey.
Hi. Yeah.
So I was just calling because I heard that early caller asking about a system to connect to Vano, which is something that I have. And Sonos has this particular equipment called Sonos Connect, and it gives you the ability to kind of attach a cord between the vinyl player to the Sonos Connect system, and then it streams your music.
Sonos.
Yep.
Okay.
Sonos Connect. So it's a wireless receiver component, so that should help.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Good advice from our listeners.
We're crowdsourcing.
That's right.
We're talking a lot about vinyl today. I'm proud of us.
I know. Yeah. What's old is new. Let's go to Michelle in Harpswell. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm just calling about the girl who's going to study in Costa Rica and needs to have Microsoft compatible computer.
Yes.
I am in graduate school and I purchased a $129 refurbished Chromebook, and I have the Office Online suite, so I can drag that thing everywhere I want. I have access to Microsoft products, can download them if I need to share my files. But I don't worry if the computer dies because it was only $129 and everything is saved in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on this? Is a good time to check in on Chromebook. People are considering this.
Chromebooks are good. One thing I would, and that's great advice, but one thing I would want to know if I'm traveling to Costa Rica, depending on the internet connection, Office 365, the web-based version, might not be your best option. You might want to have it, the locally installed program, on the computer.
Right, and printing with a Google Chrome can be kind of dicey if you don't have a compatible printer in the Wi-Fi area.
But in general, for general use machines, for kids, I believe the school systems just go to Chromebooks
Some of them have Chromebooks.
Yeah. So, is there a reluctance for people to buy? Is it just because it's in the cloud that makes people uncomfortable?
It's just different. Yeah. It's to me, it's almost like a glorified Android phone. Sometimes, I mean, you run more like apps than programs. You're not going to necessarily install Microsoft Office or things that you put on a PC directly. But there's ways to do those same functions. It is designed to be more cloud and internet based. You know, they don't have huge hard drives. You're not storing as much locally. Some of them have really tiny hard drives and you just add SD cards like you would into a camera. But for the price and for general use, email, internet, Netflix, music, video, stuff like that, they're great little devices. And I don't want anything to be a throwaway device, but she's completely right. For $129, you break it and you bring it into us, we're probably going to tell you it's economically beyond repair, just not worth doing.
You're probably because it's going to cost $100 just coming in the door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have a turnstile.
Yeah. All right. To Sally in Brunswick. Hi, Sally.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have my internet security software subscription will expire in a couple of weeks, and I got it through the store where I bought my computer a couple of years ago, and they're telling me that they no longer will offer Kaspersky. And they recommended two others, Trend Micro and WebRoot, and I read reviews that seemed on mediocre side for both of them. From my perspective, one didn't have a firewall, one didn't do a very good job at virus protection, and I thought, well, so I guess I'm not really sure. What would you suggest at this point in terms of internet security software?
Okay. Anybody?
I recommend, I usually go with a company called ESET, E-S-E-T. They make a good product called Node or Nod, N-O-D 32. It's one we've used in our store for a long time.
Cost?
People are, I believe your first year, if you just do one machine, is like $39, and then renewals are usually like $20 or $25. If you do multi-year plans or multiple computers, you can really drive down the cost. We are seeing people move away, the government, people moving away from Kaspersky. It's a Russian name. You guys connect the dots.
Wow.
But people are moving away, and some to hear retail stores not offering that is interesting. But keep in mind, I tell antivirus is like a seatbelt and an airbag. It helps. It adds safety, but it's no guarantee. I mean, the last study I read, even your best antiviruses out there are good for maybe 50% of what comes across. There's tens of thousands of new pieces of malicious software hitting the internet every day. And what you're paying for with good antivirus software is somebody out there essentially researching, finding these things, figuring out how to detect them on a machine, and then uploading that to your machine so it can be on the hunt and look for these things. But that process, sometimes the delay in that process, you could hit something before your antivirus even has a chance to understand or know what it is. So,
and then it's a trip to see you.
It could be, or Andrew, or any of your fine local folks around here. But just keep in mind, outside of antivirus best practices, if it looks suspicious, it is suspicious. Don't click on random things that you don't know. Look in the address bar up at the top. You know, are you at google.com or are you at some long, convoluted, weird address? You know, these are the types of things that we need to educate ourselves on so that you can be on the lookout for telltale signs, because outside of your antivirus, you're your next best defense.
And I'll just hop in. Since you have an older machine, you know, and buying a newer piece of software, make sure that your machine is up to snuff to run that newer software. A lot of these internet security and virus protection use a lot of resources. And, you know, depending on how old your machine is, how many resources that antivirus, internet security uses. Some of them are more heavy-handed than another. I'd probably trust Jared as far as what he's putting on his, you know, his machines, yep. But that's a consideration.
That's one of the big reasons we've always used ESET, because it runs a much lighter imprint on the computer. Your Nortons and McAfees of the world, to me, they're the Pepsis and Cokes. Everyone knows the name. It's not necessarily a great product for you. So you pay a lot, and then you... If you get antivirus and it slows your machine down to a crawl, it kind of doesn't do a lot for you. So,
right. Mm-hmm. All right. Email from Chip. How about robots for kids and coding? Any recommendations?
Oh, well, I do. That's kind of my passion. My favorite is Dash and Dot. They've been around for a while, and there's a lot of enhancements. And you need a tablet or an iPhone or an Android device in order to do the coding. There's tons of others. There's Osmos. I can't even remember all the names of them. There's a couple of good articles out right now, and I'll post them. But one's at interestingengineering.com, and they have the 9 best robot toys for children this year. And Time Magazine also did STEM toys, gifts for Christmas holiday, and I would take a look at those. But, you know, more than anything, align the robot that you're buying with the right age group. And so that, you know, the interest level is there. And
And there's also a great video, too, that's fun to watch with your kids. You can find it on YouTube, Boston Dynamics, the robotics company in Boston. They developed a prototype robot that actually does gymnastics. It's truly extraordinary.
These are the ones that I've seen the videos of, the, like the dog running. That
right. They yeah. had little dog, big dog. Yeah. Now they've got this other, this new robot that can do a backflip.
Pretty amazing. All right, let's go to Eric in Rockport. Hi, Eric.
Yes, hello. I have a question about routers. I'm curious if the panel has found any, among the different brands, any reliable ones that are more reliable than others as far as brands, and also some of the newer features that they're offering, like dual band and tri-band and some other features that may not be applicable to all the equipment we're using. So I just wanted your guys' opinion on the on these two subjects. Thank you.
I have one actually written down on my list, which is Google Wi-Fi. And shout out to my friend JT. He's the one that told me about it. He lives up on the West End in a three-story house, and he replaced it, and he loved it. And I've actually recommended it to multiple customers, including one who called us up and needs to come out and help us help him out. But he had essentially broken his leg and couldn't move around the house and needed help. We couldn't get out there and help him, and he had one delivered from Amazon the next day. You set it up with an app. They're very user-friendly. Google Wi-Fi can come with one base station or up to three, and it gives you excellent coverage. It's full technology. They're easy to set up. The price point is a little higher depending on what, if you get the whole set. I mean, it can, the three series set can, I think, be closer to about $300. But everything I've read and seen, and when I go to replace in my house next time, I think that's the system that I'll be going with.
Okay.
Okay. So among the conventional brands like Linksys and D-Link, those brands, there, you don't find as much of a difference in reliability over time with those?
You don't need those old brands anymore, because I think that it's much easier to set up a Google Wi-Fi system or an Apple network system than it is to deal with the older style, you know, login systems with the and I think security is much better too.
Okay.
It's hard for some people to get into Netgear and reconfigure the security and make sure that they've got a correct password and all of this.
All right, Eric, thanks very much. We're almost out of time. Any cool things that you want to mention here before we go that people we haven't talked about yet that people might want to be aware of? Any apps that you've had lately? That...
Wow, I forgot about apps. I haven't been downloading apps recently. There's so much other stuff. We were just talking in the break, AirPods. Anyone, I don't know what their back order status is right now, but Apple AirPods for people with iOS devices, wireless, two earpieces. People that wear headphones a lot and want to cut the cord from the wire, they're unbelievable.
Okay, and with that, I'm sorry, Janet, we're out of time. But we can post it on the web. I appreciate all of you guys. Great seeing you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. Rodney Nickpour ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.